بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. قل هو الله أحد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا أحد. قل بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. قل أعوذ برب الفلق من شر ما خلق ومن شر غاسق إذا وقب ومن شر النفاثات في العقد ومن شر حاسد إذا حسد. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. قل أعوذ برب الناس ملك الناس إله الناس ملك الناس إله الناس من شر الوسواس الخناس الذي يوسوس في صدور الناس من الجنة والناس.
As it is customary, the Khulafa-e Silsila Ali Ahmadiyya have been commenting on the last three verses, surahs of the Holy Quran, last three chapters of the Holy Quran, before the end of Ramadan and before the congregation prayer in which we join during the last moments of Ramadan. These verses have been commented upon very extensively by these verses, these chapters or surahs have been commented upon very extensively and in great depth by Hazrat Musleh Maud radiallahu ta'ala anhu, and the commentary in Tafsir-e Kabir, particularly regarding these last three chapters, is very rich in meaning and very wide and very deep in philosophy, that is to say in the philosophy of the Holy Quran. If you read these three, the commentary on these three chapters in the Tafsir Kabir, then you understand the very philosophy of the Holy Quran itself. Because after Surah Fatiha, these three chapters deal in the fundamentals and the rudiments of the Holy Quran and contain all the important principles which are used as guidelines for the rest of the Holy Quran by Allah. So that is a very interesting and very rich and rewarding reading if some of you who understand Urdu can spare some time to go through that. Although these commentaries in full have been published, Tafsir-e Kabir, but unfortunately, as I have assessed, many among the people who are living in the West can't understand Urdu well, so they are deprived of this treasure. And secondly, those who can read Urdu, they are so busy elsewhere, so occupied in other things, that they have not enough time left for the study of the Holy Quran as such. And for the study in detail of the Holy Quran, they have very little time whatsoever. When I say that, I don't mean genuinely they don't have time. What I mean to say is, this is their treatment of their time. Most unfair treatment, I must say. Because time is to be spent on the best things of life. And a comparative order should be organized in one's mind so that where time belongs most, it should be spent most. Now, this is a very categorical statement, and in detail, when you work it out, it may not work out as it appears. The time belongs to God, of course, and the holy study of the Holy Quran is, of course, the very best thing on which you can spend the time. But in practical life, I fully agree that for the maintenance of material life and the material life system, most of one's time is occupied. So I'm not talking of that time which occupies one's professional pursuits, but I'm talking of afal. The Holy Quran has thrown light on this subject. يَسَلُونَكَ مَا إِذَا يُنْفِقُونَ They ask you, what should they spend in the cause of Allah? How realistic the approach is. Allah doesn't say everything completely. He says, قُلِ الْعَفْوِ Whatever is left over for you, from that you spend. And if you can spend it all together, then spend all together. So similarly, when I'm talking of time, I have in mind that time which is left to you after performing the essentials for your survival. Then whatever is left to you, that has to be organized in your mind in order of preferences, and the preference should be given to the best things. When I say the service of the Holy Quran, that can be extended into all regions in which Holy Quran is served directly or indirectly. So if somebody is preaching, that is also the service of the Holy Quran, in that you employ the Holy Quran, the arguments based on the Holy Quran, you serve the cause of the Holy Quran as such by enrolling people into the believers list and so on and so forth. So all that is service. But in spite of everything, there must be some time devoted constantly and regularly for the study as pure study of the Holy Quran. And that is where we are lacking. That is what I want to point out to you. So it just incidentally occurred to me that there is such a wealth of the Holy Quran explained and commented upon and made easy, like pre-digested food for you by Hazrat Musleh Maud in his Tafsir-e-Kabir, which is now available. But how many people are there who really benefit from this treasure? If they do, then they'll be caught up by the interest itself. Then there will be no urging required for any organization to tell them to go on studying. Once you enter this world, then it draws you into it itself. So this is why I'm pointing out that after the Ramadan is over, if various organizations like Khudamul Ahmadiyya and Ansarullah, they can initiate people into this study somehow, the rest would become easy, and then the beauty and the charm of the study itself would do the remaining work for those whom we want to initiate into the study of the Holy Quran. The first surah which I have recited is Qul Huwallahu Ahad. Remind me of the approaching time, because I think we must have at least 20 minutes for the announcement prayer and prayer itself. Or if more, perhaps 25 minutes or 30 minutes, will you all right? Because then we have to part in time for that. So we have only time about, say, roughly by 8:30 we should finish. This first surah, which is called Surah Ikhlas, deals with the unity of God. And this is the last word in the description of the unity in every direction. So comprehensive and so complete, and yet so short, that as I mentioned earlier too, some companions of the Holy Prophet really fell in love with this surah. And in every prayer they would recite this surah among other surahs, and they simply couldn't dissociate themselves from the thought of this surah because it enamored them. And it is indeed a most beautiful description of Allah's unity. I'll try not to repeat things which I have already said about this surah in my earlier commentaries. قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدْ. Say, God is one. And Ahad also means alone. One with none else. He is and nothing else is. That sort of unity is described. So we'll turn to that later on in establishing a connection between this surah and the following surah. But when you say somebody is one, someone is one, it can indicate both extreme power and extreme helplessness and weakness. This word is indicative of both the extremes. Sometimes when you have conquered your enemies who are overwhelmingly larger than you in number and you have done it alone by yourself, then the emphasis on your oneness is a tribute to your greatness as well. Because then it indicates that you are sufficient by yourself and you are enough to deal with an enemy which apparently had all the odds in his favor. Yet you did it by yourself. And when, on the other hand, in such cases, you know, the solo attempt is emphasized everywhere. I did it solo, you know, myself, by myself. I lifted it by myself. I defeated somebody by myself. So that is a compliment of a high magnitude. But on the other hand, when you are left alone and you have been deserted and there is nobody to help you, then it creates a sense of weakness. Then the same emphasis creates a completely different impression on the listeners. Somebody has beaten you and you say, well, I was alone, you know, I was only one and there were so many. So that oneness in your defense creates the impression of your weakness. Oneness is connected also with weakness. You know, once there was some thieves burgled into a house. One thief, in fact, one single thief burgled into a house, and there was the father and a grown-up son, and they tried to prevent him stealing things, but he decamped with all the looty and he was too much for them. In the morning, the son put forward this excuse to those who said, "What? How could it happen? One thief overwhelmed you." He said, "Look here, the point was that chor te lathi jo lathi do jane te main te bapu kalle." There were two persons, the thief and his staff and his stick. And poor me and my father were alone by ourselves. So this stress on loneliness is an expression of weakness. And here he wants to justify his defeat at the hand of one person because he says, we were just alone. So, when God says Ahad, both these concepts are conjured up in one's mind. It could signify absolute power. It could signify absolute weakness. So in what sense is this word used? The following, Allahu Samad, completes the picture. A samad, among other things, means self-sufficient and the one to whom everybody else turns for help, on whom everybody else depends, besought by all. So, like the word ahad has two connotations, there are two corresponding connotations in the word asamad, which perfectly fit with each other. And this is how the whole story is completed. Allahu Ahad, God is alone. But in his loneliness, he is sufficient by himself. He is all powerful in every regard. His loneliness is no harm to him, no blemish to him. He can live by himself and he does not require anybody, even a company. So this is the complete independence of God's concept, which has been created by God, by this surah, Qul Huwallahu Ahad. And again, Allahu Samad, he is alone. Not only that, he is not weak, but he is the support of everyone else. So in that emphasis on the greatness of oneness is laid in a way that nowhere else can you conceive of such a compliment to the oneness of anybody. He is one in the sense that he is alone and does not require the help of anybody else in any regard whatsoever. So that is the complete concept of unity, which renders God the most absolute values in oneness. And secondly, everything else is dependent upon Him. Now, this opens also the way for multiplicity and otherness. When you say Allah is one and He is alone, this can become a compliment to Him if there are others and still He doesn't need them. So there are two types of loneliness and onenesses. One is in which God is alone and there is nothing else, so what could He need and how could He need anybody, and that's that, but He's just by Himself. Asamad explains this. There are others, but not worth mentioning. Only they are worth mentioning in regards to their relationship to God. If they are not related to God, they become zeros, because they can't sustain, they can't survive. They can't sustain themselves and they cannot survive because they are dependent upon God in their existence. In everything they are, they have their dependence on God in one way or the other. So, He is one, not in the sense that is nobody else. Everybody else is hanging from His oneness, is sustained by His oneness. So, He is all-powerful, all-sufficient, and everything else there is nothing without Him. That would become zero if not added to Him. Lam yalid walam yulad. Now there is also a possible suspicion lurking in one's mind that maybe God is one and all powerful and self-sufficient, everything all seeks His help for its existence, etc. Okay. But what about eternity? What about such a being, being in itself a transient being? Is there not a danger of such a being having a temporary life? So this second part of the statement negates all these fears. Number one, lam yalid means He does not beget. he needs not beget. Now, what is the connection between begetting and eternity? If you understand the philosophy of begetting, you know that you beget to gain a sort of eternity. Every living organism has a limited period of life, limited span of life, and to give continuity to oneself, this system of reproduction is designed by God so that you have a measure of satisfaction that when I pass away, something like me will be left behind. So that desire to be eternal creates the concept of begetting others. Now, Allah, if everything else is dependent upon Him, must have created this system of reproduction. If He has created this system of reproduction for others, because the first statement, As-Samad, indicates that everything else in everything depends on God. That positively establishes that Allah it was who designed and implemented the system of reproduction to which we are referring. And the reason is obviously evident now, as I have told you. Why couldn't He do it for Himself if He was not eternal? And a being which is in itself threatened by death. If that being is designing a measure of eternity for others and bestowing it upon them, why can't it do it for itself? So this is why this declaration makes God eternal. He doesn't beget consciously. He knows that there is no need for Him to beget. Now that means if Allah wanted, He could beget. There's not a weakness in Him. He can't beget is something, a statement which is derogatory. But He does not beget is not a derogatory statement. It means that He does not need to. He stands in no need. So His samadhiyat is also complimented upon in this. That He is so self-sufficient that He is not even dependent on His own offsprings for adding a measure of perfection to His concept of completeness. He is complete by Himself, He is perfect by Himself, He is also eternal, and He doesn't beget in that sense. Walam yulad, and He was never begotten. That is to say, He has become eternal not only as we look forward to the time, but as we look backwards in time, the same God is found ever as He is now. He was never begotten by others, so that He is not dependent either on the past or on the future. His independence now becomes complete. A one God who is completely self-sufficient, in present everything else depends on Him, and in future too, He does not depend on anything else for His continuity and for His maintenance of His powers. And in the past, He never looked up to anyone for bestowing anything upon Him. So whatever He has belongs to Him, it is not inherited. After that, one wonders why lam yakul lahu kufuwan ahad. There is no kufuw to Him. Kufuw means something which is built on the same pattern, which has the same traits, similar habits, similar style of life, and so on and so forth. This is why the word kufuw is used by Ahadu sallallahu alayhi wa sallam regarding the betrothals. He has advised us, admonished us, that we should seek for kufr. When we marry into those people who have our kufr, who have similar social habits and systems and life and the preferences in life and so on, so that we just fit into each other perfectly. So Allah has no kufr. When Ahad denies the existence of everything else, independent existence, why should there be this emphasis on kufr by God? Other commentators have been intrigued by this, and having found no answer, they have sought refuge in the possible solution that perhaps kufr indicates emphasis of the subject which has already been discussed. Lam yakul lahu kufuwan, according to these commentators, does not add anything to the description of God already made. Lam yakul lahu kufuwan ahad emphasizes the previous description, that what we have said is absolutely true, absolutely right, and there is nothing like him, like unto him. Hazrat Muslim Aud radiallahu ta'ala anhu has disagreed with this, and he says that this completes the picture of unity of God, and it is essential in its own right to be here, the word kufr. The literal meaning is, and there is none like unto him. Now let's turn to this problem and make it clear what the problem is. Allah is one, we have understood. He is all-sufficient, self-sufficient. He is besought of everybody else, everything else. And He is eternal, both regarding the future and regarding the past. This is the complete picture. What can you add to it? God says, وَلَمْ يَكُلْ لَهُ كُفُوًا أَحَدْ. I don't remember what Hazrat Muslim Aud has written on this, but he has written on this aspect quite satisfactorily. But I believe personally that still there is need for kufr in the sense that there is a possibility of such an eternal being at one time having in the past, one time in the past such a being may have had some similar being living, coexisting with him, and separately living together, the other being might not have been fortunate to survive, might have been conquered by this being, so that there is only one being left. So is Ahdiyat extending into the past as completely as we see it extending into the future? This is the question which is raised. So Lam Yakun is the Arabic expression which particularly refers to the past, and also it can mean to apply to the present, and as a general statement applicable to all three tenses. But particularly Lam Yakun means he has had no kufr. There was no kufr to him. So because there is a remote possibility of somebody else sharing his oneness, in the sense that he was built similarly, they coexisted, like the Hindus believe that God is one as a supreme being, but beings similar to God, though inferior to him, but in nature similar, in nature having the same characteristics as God, did exist and do exist even today. So their concepts
or their concept of manyness of God is based on this, that God is one but he has kufur. He has similar beings, one in the sense that he is supreme and nobody shares the complete powers and complete attributes with him. But there are other beings which are similar as God, so they are also called subordinate gods. This concept belongs to the realm of mythology. And this concept is shared by Indians, by the Greeks and also by Latins, and in some other countries also such mythologies exist. So the word kufr here is particularly used in negative terms to wipe out all possible suspicions in the minds of the reader that there might have existed similar beings to God in the past, in the remote past, who did not beget God but who were independent. So with this addition, the last statement, Lam yakullahu kufuwan ahad, the concept of unity of God as entertained in the Holy Quran becomes complete and most comprehensive. And there is nothing you can add and nothing you can subtract from this statement. This is why Hazrat Muslim Aud emphasized on the right of this statement to exist independently. If it was just an emphasis, take away this last verse, the previous verses should be understood to have discharged their responsibility by describing God completely. They should be understood as having unloaded completely and told us all we need to know about the unity of God. That means this last verse becomes a sort of superfluous verse. Even without it, the concept of unity of God was complete. This is wrong. This in itself is like attributing a slight blemish to this complete surah, in which surah every verse has an independent right to be there and it fulfills a purpose in describing and completely describing the unity of God. Now, having done that, we turn to the next surah, which is Qul A'udhu bi Rabbil Falaq. If God is so complete in oneness and he is there, he is and none else is there sort of thing, then why should there be so many other things? For that opening window has been introduced in the very first verse, has been placed in the very first verse, and in the second verse, Allahu Samad. As I told you, Samad means besought of others. He is one, not in the sense that there is nothing else whatsoever, but in the sense that everything, whatever is there apart from him, is dependent on him. So everybody is carried by him, sustained by him. The moment he drops anything, it would fall into pieces and disappear into nothingness. So, essentially, there is nothing else. Because nothing else can exist by itself. As long as you are holding something, it is there. As you drop it, it finishes and destroys and is obliterated. That is the concept of oneness of God. So As-Samad requires the existence of other things beside God, but not besides, I should say, existence of other things which are entirely dependent for their existence on God. Which means that God is the creator of everything else. Now, this differentiates this concept from the Hindu concept
of coexistence of matter with God, although they also believe that matter as compared to God is devoid of powers. It depends upon God for its internal reactions and reorganizations, so that new things always emerge from the dead matter. This Hindu concept is similar to the concept of Aristotle, who also beheld the eternity of God together with the eternity of matter. But the difference between Aristotelian concept and the Hindu concept is this, that Aristotle does not consider God necessary for promoting changes in the material world. And he thinks that the matter is progressing by itself with an inner urge to proceed towards a perfection. Why should matter do it? Aristotle has no answer for that. But he believed that this is how we have found things. Everything is changing. Everything is changing towards a higher being. That is what we observe. So, everything must have an innate quality of improvement. What that quality is, we are moving towards an ideal concept of perfection. That is what Aristotle thought. But the Hindu mythology has a more positive concept of God than this. Hindus believe that although matter coexisted with God, but it needed God for bringing about changes in itself. Similarly, it needed God for welding spirits, which also existed like gods independently, welding them with matter and creating life out of dead matter or out of death. This verse, Allah Samad, negates all these concepts and creates a concept of dependence of everything else upon God in complete sense. Now, when you understand the word asamad in this area, then you will have to conceive of a God which also created everything. Because everything else is dependent upon Him for everything it has. That is to say, in existence inclusive. Everything else is dependent upon God, or even for its existence. That means, if it existed independently, then God would not be Samad. Because Samad means who does not require help from anyone, and everything else requires help from him. Now, for instance, suppose for a while other things coexisted, but they were powerless, God was supreme as Hindus believe, then God would be dependent on that material. So he would not be a Samad. You know, the scientists today emphasize the availability of material so much that material has become a science by itself. Search for new materials has become a very highly sophisticated and developed science now, because they know that the knowledge by itself or the power to do something by itself is not sufficient. You depend upon the quality of material. And the better quality the material is, more power you will gain, more achievements you will have. So, dependence on material is a well-established scientific fact now. It has become a science. So, if God is Samad,
he must not depend on material. He must be able to make his material. And that is creation. So the word asamad is a most wonderful word placed here, and it serves a very essential purpose, and from it emerges the concept of God being creator of everything. Hazrat Muslim also has treated the word asamad in the similar sense, and he says that the sense of being khaliq is derived from the word asamad. So once you understand the unity of God in this sense, He is there, but He has always been creating others. So there would also be a sort of eternity added to the concept of other beings. If God is eternal, and if He is eternally self-sufficient, if eternally everything, if He was eternally besought, so there have to be other things eternal. In the sense that God continuously created them. And there were, never was a state in time when God was not besought. So His attribute of creation or creativeness being eternal, there have to be other things having been created or being created by God. So that makes the complete picture. How we can prove that God does create and everything else is transient but God, that can be proved according to Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam. He has discussed this subject at length by the fact that momentarily times come in every area of creation where creation is nullified and wiped out and God is left alone. وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ ذُو الْجَلَالِ وَالْإِكْرَامِ. Everything else, كُلَّ مَنْ عَلَيْهَا فَانْ وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ ذُو الْجَلَالِ وَالْإِكْرَامِ. Everything else is, you know, passes away and finishes. But God remains. The Holy Quran has described this phenomenon in detail in some other verses, but for that there is no time. It should suffice for you to understand that even in this eternity of other things, which is dependent on God's creativeness, times come when they totally disappear. But not at the same time from all over existence. There are times when things are created here and times when things are annihilated there. And these things go on changing from place to place and from dimension to dimension. This concept of eternity of God and His relationship to His creation is now assuming new proportions as the scientists are studying the phenomenon of creation in greater depth. There are now even suggestions that what we conceive as black holes, where matter disappears, may be something of a phenomenon which so far we cannot perfectly understand. Some scientists are offering this possibility that maybe the universe disappears in these dimensions and appears in some other dimensions. So the act of annihilation is simultaneously the act of creation. We sink here and appear in another worldliness. And similarly, the seesaw goes on, which in itself is eternal. And according to the Holy Quran, this concept is quite weighty. This concept of eternal relationship of creation and annihilation. is mentioned in many verses of the Holy Quran. But as I said, there's no time for enlarging this. But it's a very interesting area of research.
अब बताएं जब दो सोचते रहती हैं जी हैं लेट बताया आपने मैं जब मैंने खुद देख लिया था उस वक्त बताया आपने
कुल आउज़ु बिरब नाउ आई विल से अ फ्यू थिंग्स आई ट्राई टू सम इट अप नाउ बिकॉज़ यू मस्ट रीच द एंड बिफोर द प्रेयर्स قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقَ I have spoken at length in my previous verses of 2 years or 3 years here in England and also before I came to England in Pakistan for 2 years. Let me first here pick out the word shar and say a few more things about this. رَبِّ الْفَلَقِ can be understood as the God of creation, Lord of creation. Min sharre ma khalaq means from the mischief, O God, give us protection or refuge. From, O Lord of creation, give us protection or refuge from the evil or mischief of what you have created. Now the first idea which strikes one's mind is, does God create everything evil? Is there no goodness in things? Why everything which God creates must have an evil aspect? And why should we seek refuge in Him from the evil influences of what He has created? I have discussed it enough in the previous verses to explain that there is no shar created by itself, but the usage of created things or wrong usage of created things can create shar. So shar is not an essential part of creation. If it had been an essential part of, now I am telling you this an additional thing, if it had been an essential part of creation, then there should not have been any refuge from it. There couldn't have been any escape or any running away, because you can't run away from the creation of God to the creation of God. Wherever you go, there would be shar following you, because wherever you go, there would be the creation of God. So this possibility of totally escaping the shar of creation shows that the shar is not an essential part of creation at all. It is not something which is integral with the concept of creation. So you can escape it and you can run from it and escape it into the refuge of Allah, provided by God. So, in this sense, shar only means misuse of creation. Everything is created for a purpose, for goodness. But a misuse can convert it into an object of mischief. Diamonds are a beautiful creation of God, and they are so wonderful to look at and very precious to obtain. But if you swallow a diamond, you will commit suicide. So that there is a shar attached. But the shar attached only when you use it outside its purpose. So when you seek refuge from Allah, seek refuge in Allah from the wrong usage of things, that also invites your attention to the study of the purposes and a wider understanding of why things are created. Because when you seek refuge of Allah from their wrong usage, you must know the wrong usage. And you must learn how the best a thing should be employed and how the employment of a thing should be avoided. So that opens a wide window for acquiring knowledge as to the best why a thing is created and what are the purposes of its creation. So all this study, scientific study, of the purposes of things is encouraged by the study of this surah. Also, it is not to depress you. Apparently, when it speaks of ghasikin izawakab, the night when it deepens, the darkness which covers everything, or the new moon when it is eclipsed and so on and so forth, a picture of terror is created where you are as if you are overwhelmed by darkness and the forces of darkness. But as I said, this is not to depress you, but to lead you to greater hopes. Because the end part of this surah says, وَمِن شَرِّ حَاسِدٍ إِذَا حَسَدٍ. O God, extend us protection from the jealous beings when they become jealous of us. So if you are overwhelmed by darkness, if you are stricken with evil aspect of everything which is created, then why should somebody be jealous of you? This last verse indicates that you can survive all these trials if you continuously look towards God. Then you will emerge victorious in the sense that you will have suffered through all these possible dangers and survived and come out whole without having been inflicted in any sense of the word by these imminent dangers through which you are passing your life of existence, you're passing your course of existence. So, min sharri hasidin iza hasad shows that there are people who turn to God and there are people who do not turn to God. The people who turn to God provide enough reason for those who do not turn to God to be jealous of them. So a new concept of haves and have-nots is born out of this surah. The haves, have-alls are those who have God and who are saved from the detrimental effects of everything created, with the result that they emerge all the gainers in every direction, in every respect. And those who do not turn to God, what they are left with is sharre ma khalaq, the evil of what God has created. So they become the have-nots. So like the scientific socialist theory, the Holy Quran also has a theory of its own of haves and have-nots. Haves are those who have God and who are not afraid of anything else then. And have-nots are those who are left only to be jealous, and as such, they also offer a source of evil and destructiveness. Because jealous people, because they can't gain anything by in themselves, become a source of danger to those who have. So this fight between religious people and irreligious people, those who have God and who do not have God, becomes a perpetual battle between the two forces. And there you can also be emerge victorious if you continuously pray to God and turn to Him, seeking refuge in His powers against the evil aspects of all that He has created. Here, khalq is mentioned as such. In the last surah, the most advanced form of khalq is mentioned. And not only the advanced form, but within that advanced form of khalq, that is creation, there are other peaks rising from within that khalq. they are also mentioned in the surah under the title jinn. Jinn means, among other things, great people, the capitalists or the leaders and so on and so forth. So when you read this surah, as against the previous surah which discusses khalq as such, the creation of God, inanimate and animate all-inclusive, this surah now concentrates on the creation of man and the dangers inherent upon that creation. Still, if you save yourself from all other dangers attendant upon the creation of God, if you misuse it, of course, between yourselves, between Nas and Nas, there are relationships potent with dangers. And there are three types of relationships. They have been categorized in three areas by Allah in this verse. One, relationship of rububiyat, that is economic relationships. Secondly, relationship of sovereignty, statehood. The relationship between man and the governments, or between governments and governments. And thirdly, relationship based on religious concepts, that is uluhiyat. So if you study the area of human relation, various areas of human relationship, this statement is summed up so perfectly and so beautifully that there is nothing else left which you can conceive. All human relationships fall into these three most important and fundamental categories, and everything else is subordinate. That is, economic relationship, state relation, governmental relationships or state relationship, and religious relationship. After that, nothing else is left. In all these relationships, there are inherent dangers. So you are invoking the real and the ultimate and the absolute Rabb, that is sustainer, the Lord of provisions. And you are invoking his this attribute in him and asking for his refuge, begging for his refuge from all other human beings, because An-Nas here refers to all other human beings, which means there is a struggle between every individual and the rest of the society. Every individual must exist, and as far as possible, he must obtain his rights from the rest of the society regarding his survival economically. So because the rest of the society, An-Nas, here are pitched against one man, and a lot is going to be said and done in this region, philosophically and scientifically, all that which was to be done in future, the seed for that is sowed in this verse, and that has been indicated in this short statement. There is a relationship based on economy in which every man will be pitched against the society as such. Matters would be discussed as to how far his individuality is to be maintained and how far the right of the society is to be maintained in relationship to his individual right, and so on and so forth. A huge struggle is going to be lost based on these principles, and as such, mankind could be divided into capitalist concept and socialist concept. In the previous, greater emphasis would be given to the individuality at the cost of the social values and the rights of others as such, and on the other hand, balance will tilt in the favor of society as such, and individual can be deprived of his due rights economically in this sense of sustenance. Similarly, you can extend this to the other two statements. And in a nutshell, you enter a great war of survival for the fittest, where your individual's interest is concerned. Allah advises you that you turn to God. Place the concept of ultimate overlordship in the system of provisions and sustenance in God. Place your confidence in God as ultimate sovereign. Place your confidence in God as the true being worthy of allegiance and worthy of worship. And seek refuge in Him. Then you will be saved from all the detrimental effects, all the evils attendant upon these future fights or regions of struggle, which have been mentioned in this verse. Why I am saying this is explained by the verse, Min sharril waswasil khannas, Allazi yuwaswisu fi sudurin nasi min al-jinnati wan nas. I think, as far as I remember, I established the contact sufficiently during my past sermon, so I don't want to repeat it. Let it suffice here for those who have newly joined us that min sharril waswasil khannas opens the window for all the future philosophies to be created regarding sustenance of man, that is economic system, sovereignty, that is the concept of statehood, state and politics, and religion. And in all these three regions, we are warned that new philosophies would be born, which would be satanic philosophies, which will, if you are led by them, you will be destroyed, they will mislead you, and God is warning you that ultimately all these areas would be used by Satan extensively. He will breathe into people's mind, people, both the proletariats and the bourgeois, because it says min al jinnati wan nas. They will be breathed into by Satan, and new ideologies, new concepts, new philosophies would be born pertaining to all these regions, which may mislead you. So the only answer left for you is to turn to God and seek His protection and come under His refuge. Accept the Quranic philosophy, that is to say, when we seek refuge of God, how can we ignore the word of God? So that is to say, turn to the Quran, have faith in the Quranic philosophy, reject every other philosophy which opposes the Quranic philosophy, the Quranic concept of all these three important areas of human activities and human interests, and that should suffice you. So seek refuge in Allah also means seek refuge in the Holy Quran. And with the help of Holy Quran, you will be able to fight effectively all the modern philosophies attacking the truth as we understand it from the Holy Quran.